Does Habakkuk teach us to ask questions, find answers, or simply to trust? Hello, I'm Alden Thompson for Good Word. Today we continue our discussions of the Minor Prophets, and we have a remarkable book, Habakkuk. The Bible doesn't tell us much about Habakkuk, except that he was probably part of the needed revival before Jerusalem actually fell. But we have a special opportunity to talk about Habakkuk today, because when I was talking to my conversation partners about it, we're doing the Minor Prophets. Dave Thomas said, that's my book. So, Dave, I want you to answer my question. Does Habakkuk teach us how to ask questions, find answers, or simply to trust, or none of the above?
Well, I'm going to give you a slightly circuitous answer to that, because I remember the first time as an adult, I realized that Habakkuk was actually angry at God and had no qualms against voicing his anger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I grew up in a respect-oriented society, and it was a shock to me as an adult to say, what, he's talking to God like that? You know, I mean, he's blowing off steam. He's mad.
Yes.
Why?
That's interesting you'd say that, Dave, because my reaction, that's when I discovered that Abraham was talking to God in Genesis 18. You're the judge of all the earth. You can't do that.
Oh, yeah.
That just blew me away. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
No, you know, in my mind, the fact that Habakkuk would vent like this indicates the degree of his frustration. Mm-hmm. That he is just beside himself with distress about evil, and especially how the wicked are prospering and the righteous are being overrun. You know, this makes no sense to him. And he cries out to God, and this book has some amazing verses. Verse 4 there of chapter 1, so the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth. That the societal conditions are such that people are so invested in evil and wrongdoing that the law itself has become paralyzed. It's not going to work.
Next phrase, the wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted.
Yeah. So, what strikes me about this is that God does answer. You ask, does Habakkuk teach us to ask questions, to find answers? I think in the final sense, he tells us to trust, that the human knowledge is not big enough to answer all these questions, that there is a cosmic dimension to life that we only glimpse. And the strategy that he finally pursues here, and I'm going to jump to that, Alden, because
sure.
I think my favorite chapter in the whole Old Testament is chapter 3. Mm. Because and we have to build up to chapter 3, by the way, because after his first rant and rave, and my Bible, it says Habakkuk's complaint. That's a very gentle way of talking about what he did. But God gives him an answer. You know, he says, God, what are you going to do about this? And God says, take it easy. He says, I'm bringing the Chaldeans. I'm bringing the Babylonians in. They'll clean up the whole mess. And, you know, now Habakkuk is doubly troubled, because how can the chief enemy of his own people, who are the people of God, be used to come and overrun and bring justice and so forth? I mean, it's like madness. And God finally tells him to go and just go and be still. And I love in chapter 3, because while Habakkuk is standing, watching, God comes out of his place, and the language is huge. It's you know, God comes from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. This is chapter 3, verse 3. His splendor covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was like the light. Rays flashed from his hand, and there he veiled his power. Before him went pestilence, and plague followed at his heels. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and shook the nations. Then the eternal mountains were scattered. The everlasting. So, I mean, this goes on and on, and that God comes out here and everything trembles, and even pestilence and plague goes ahead of God, and, you know, the sea is thrashed and mountains writhe. And verse 12, you marched through the earth in fury, you threshed the nations in anger, you went out for the salvation of your people. for the salvation of your anointed. See, that the grandeur and the majesty and the power of God is put to use not just for the destruction and tearing up things, but for the redemption, the salvation of his people. And I think that's one reason I like this book so much, is because it portrays a God who's mighty, and yet he's doing it for redemptive purposes. Yeah.
It's interesting to note that verse 1, you know, this is what Habakkuk saw. Usually it says the word of the Lord comes to the prophet. It usually says, you know, the Lord spoke or the word of the Lord came. This is Habakkuk saw.
Oh, yeah, God was at work.
God was at work. He saw it happening. Yeah. And then the last one, you know, the chapter 3 that you're talking about, it said it is a prayer. So maybe still in vision and prayer at the same time here, seeing all these things.
Well, it begins with a prayer, and then he sees God at work, yeah.
Yeah, it begins with a prayer, and then it's obviously, again, he's seeing the vision. God came. He
came out of T-Man.
Yeah, seeing where he came out of.
And perhaps the most poignant part of this whole book is the last few verses. Because, you know, well, start in verse 15 there, that you trampled the sea with your horses, the surging of mighty waters. I hear, Habakkuk says, and my body trembles, my lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters into my bones, my legs tremble beneath me. Yet I will quietly wait for the day of trouble to come upon people who invade us. And then there comes his confession, or his testimony. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. So, and you know, when you look at this from an agricultural point of view, especially when you're living in an agricultural economy where you're tied, that's all spelling disaster. There's no figs, there's no fruit, there's no olives, there's no fields, produce nothing, the flocks are all gone. In other words, you're facing your own demise. Even in the midst of that, he's going to trust in God.
Yeah, this is a very meaningful passage. I've liked the book of Habakkuk for a long time. But as you know, a little over 3 years ago, we lost our beloved daughter.
Yeah.
And on her tomb, on her gravestone, is a quote.
Really? I didn't know that.
From here at the end of Habakkuk, you know. Though all this happens, you know, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. So that made it doubly powerful in my life.
You know, I came to love this because the most difficult funeral I ever had to do, which I'm not going to describe here, was a tragic death of a much-loved woman. And this verse became the place of hiding for the preacher, which was me, and the congregation. You can't explain all those things. You can't explain it. And sometimes it looks like evil does triumph in this life, but not ultimately. Not ultimately. And so I found solace in those words of, even though I can't say I've had any great suffering in my life, but that verse is powerful, those verses.
Well, it's linked with Paul in Romans 8, where he says, "Now, for in hope we were saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what is seen? But if we wait for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience." Can't answer everything, but hope is not anything that can be proved.
Yeah.
It's just a trust. Now, there's one verse that Paul picks up, and I'd like for us to tuck on that in the few minutes that are remaining here. The way my translation, this is the New International Version, in chapter 2, verse 4, "But the righteous person shall live by his faithfulness." And there is a lively discussion among scholars when Paul uses this. Is he talking about faithfulness, human faithfulness, or about faith in God? Do we have any wise commentaries or experiential commentaries from the audience?
Well, my translation says, "But the righteous shall live by his faith." It's as if he owns the faith.
Yeah, mine says, "The just shall live by his faith," small h.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, mine is small. So I don't know how to answer your question, Alden.
Well, I think that question should be answered yes.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, well, I think that we can't let, what should I say, the main impetus of the Old Testament in this passage does not need to govern what we see Paul attempting to say in the passage. Paul takes this and uses it, and there is a connection, but we don't need to, if we discover some meaning or believe that Habakkuk is saying some particular thing, we do not need to take that as what Paul means. It doesn't govern what Paul says.
But I also think, you know, if I understand Wesleyan theology well, and I think I understand at least in part, is that there is some benefit that accrues in the life of a person who lives righteously. Now, that doesn't become meritorious. It's not like they're earning their salvation, but, you know, goodness and good living and right living establishes a residue, and I wonder if that couldn't be applied here.
Well, from an Old Testament point of view, one could actually say that the law is gospel, Torah is gospel, because it shows us how to live.
Mm-hmm.
As one member of our Sabbath school class says, the Ten Commandments just keep you out of jail. But that is a tension that one has to live with.
You know, Alden, can I throw in something else?
Yes.
Another reason I like the book Habakkuk is that it does not dismiss suffering as something inconsequential. You know, so often when people are in trouble, we tell them, you basically tape it, take a deep breath and get over it, or, you know, buck up.
Woman, take an aspirin.
Yeah, be strong. This book recognizes that suffering, evil, is a bad thing. And it's a real thing.
Well, and it's okay to react to that as well, which Habakkuk does.
But, I mean, it's not some illusion. It's not something you talk away. It's something that's real, and sometimes the only thing to do is to sit down and cry because you've been overtaken by all of this stuff.
Yeah. That's where I think...
Or be angry. Even to be angry.
And the Psalms are wonderful in that respect. Almost half of the Psalms are complaints. You know, and I've had some of my students complain that they don't like the whining in the Psalms. But, boy, if you got a
problem.
They're too young. That's right.
You have to get knocked around the ears by life a little while.
That's right. You need to experience a few disappointments.
And I think we need to recognize that Scripture is a wonderful combination of messages from God to us, but also confessions, complaints, our complaints, confessions to God. See, and that brings a full circle. And it's not terribly helpful to put those together.
Well, honesty is a great, what should I say, a very important thing to have in the Christian life.
Mm-hmm.
Frankness about your condition, openness about what's going on is not only biblical, it's also therapeutic, psychologically, emotionally, all kinds of ways. And we find that in Habakkuk.
Well, next week we will turn to another very strong book, Zephaniah, with some very strong messages. And Dave, John will be back with us. I want to thank Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and each of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.